Hello and welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. So today's guest, 100,000 followers, a six-figure ghostwriting agency, 99 personalities and a LinkedIn ghostwriter is one. Today's guest is one of LinkedIn's more honest and open creators, not afraid to wear his heart on his sleeve. Today we're joined by one of, if not the best, copywriters on LinkedIn. He's not afraid to speak his mind. Today's guest is Luke Matthews. Luke, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jack. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you for joining us. We've seen each other back and forth on LinkedIn. I think when I only joined the platform a couple of years ago, and you were one of those faces that I kept scrolling. Who is this guy? I don't get it. And now I know you. Now I really know
Nobody
you.
Nobody gets it, man. It's like, why is this guy everywhere? I don't get it.
They get it in the end. But well, I'll ask this question the way that we start all of our podcasts. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
Great question. So I am the first AI ghostwriter. I'm actually not human. This is just completely, no, I'm not.
I knew it.
My name is Luke. I'm originally from Canada. I started on social 2016 on Instagram, actually, believe it or not. Whole long boring rabbit trail, but I was a micro influencer in sustainable fashion. It's where I learned my strong selfie game that I brought over to LinkedIn. So I did that for about 4 years and then started ghostwriting in early 2020 on LinkedIn back when it wasn't as popular. So I started building my brand back then during COVID times and ramped up from there. Now I primarily focus on AI startups and newsletters is what I do best. It's about 80% of my LinkedIn ghostwriting agency clients. I also do clients on Twitter X as well. That's my main focus. I also just recently launched though a community which is kind of focused on helping creators use AI to save time that they're spending on content and curating content and focus more on actually working hard, because I actually think society swung back over and everyone's fucking lazy and they need to hustle harder. So my community is kind of like, hey, let's use AI to save time where you're wasting it so that you can actually get in there and actually network and connect with people and work harder in that. So that's kind of what I'm up to now.
Interesting. And you're probably going to teach me something incredible today, because I've tried to get AI to write LinkedIn posts and I tried to think outside the box and be creative and I spend a lot of time posting nonsense on LinkedIn. I've used AI and it has come up with the most useless dribble piece of shit I've ever seen. So how do you get AI to a point where you're like, shit, that's actually good?
So for someone like you, like if I could sit in a room with you for an hour, I'd have you there and you'd save so much time because you're an incredible storyteller and you're very unique. So where it can help you is it can get you from the blank page to like 70% of the way there, meaning like the way it's formatted, like the framework. And then you're so good at storytelling and editing that by the time you finish that last 20-30%, no one would ever know AI started it. So that's typically what I do is I sit people down and I use like 2 to 3 tools to get it there. Most people, I think, make the mistake of only using GPT or some other like, you know, generic blend thing, and they put their post in there or they prompt it and it gives them crap, which is true. But you need to kind of combine 2 to 3 tools I've found to really get it there. So that's the main kind of, I guess, unique standpoint that I have with AI tools. I always blend them. So I'm always using 2 to 3 to get me 70-80% of the way there. And then it's just strong editing. Like when you've written for as long as you have, or I have, I've been doing this for years. I've written thousands and thousands of posts. I can just finish a post so fast. And AI saves me the blank page, which, to be honest, like the last couple of years, I've had more blank page syndrome than ever before. So it's helped me a lot.
And where do you, obviously you're somebody that kind of lives and breathes this. So where do you think it's going? Like AI, 5-10 years for personal brand, copywriting, ghostwriting, where are we going to be?
I think the best of the best are going to dominate even more, which is what we hate hearing. It's the same in society. I think the middle class is being destroyed. I think it's going to be the same in content creation. The best that learn how to use AI are going to crush everybody, because when you're actually a great writer and you also embrace and accept AI, it just makes you faster and better than everybody. So that's where I see it going. I only see it getting better. Whether it will ever be 100%, you know, as good as a human, we don't know. Like, stories have always dominated for humans, right? Since the caveman, writing it on the wall, and that's, storytelling isn't going anywhere. So could an AI actually have that kind of creativity? I'm skeptical, but I think it'll get really close. And I think a great storyteller who really understands AI is going to be unbeatable in personal branding for the next decade.
Okay. And then you've got, you're everywhere. You've got hundreds of thousands of people. Like you think, when I think of LinkedIn and people in your space, there are a few names that come to mind, people that you've probably collaborated with and people that you probably get lumped together with all the time. So you've got access to such a huge audience. I guess for people that are in that space or they want to be in that space, how do you actually monetize that? So top of the funnel, like you're there, like you're capturing all these eyeballs. How do you then get them further down to actually turn those into high paying clients?
It's a great question. So there's two schools of thoughts right now. Actually, if you scroll LinkedIn, you can kind of see a bit of a battle going on with strategies, right? You got the people that are all about selling through their content. So they're out there saying, hey, I've got two spots left for December, work with me, and they're establishing that urgency with their content. You know, and they talk a lot about their product and what they're selling and this kind of thing. And that definitely works, gets less engagement, less reach, not top of funnel. Anyone can do that and sell on LinkedIn or any social. I've gone the opposite end where for me, I'm going more broad. So everything I post is either a great story about my life or something I've observed, or it's educational and it actually is useful. Meaning that I've put hours and hours into a post. Like the last 2 weeks, I've written 4 guides. Each post took 6 to 8 hours to put together because I put a video with the course, made a landing page for the post. So I'm obviously on the obsessive end where I'm putting a lot of time into it. Lately, that's how I'm converting, is those posts that are essentially almost like blog posts, really, on LinkedIn. Those are getting huge reach for me. Those are getting shared. Those are getting me leads and driving traffic. So I think the two ways where if you're going to build like top of funnel, get big reach, you know, establish yourself as quote unquote kind of an influencer, that takes years. It takes a long time to build. And I think you have to post in that way for a long time and just be everywhere for a long time. And most people don't have the patience to do that, which is why it's better to do the other way. Now, what I'm trying to do is I started a community and going like, I actually think I can teach people to kind of do it the way that I do it, which isn't the standard way to win on social. You know, I think the standard way is, hey, I know my target client, you know, I know their pain points. Let's create content that speaks to that. We know that works. You do that for long enough, you're going to convert. But, you know, also at the same time, these platforms are taking away our organic reach, right? Facebook did it. Instagram did it. You know, even Twitter's doing it. LinkedIn is doing it since September. It's way down. So I think in order to last and not have to pay for ads, you're going to have to learn how to do top of funnel and convert from it. And so honestly, it's my current challenge is it's worked for me. I've converted it. How do I teach other people to do the same? And it's kind of an experiment. I can't really say for sure that it works for everybody until I've gone and tried to teach a ton of people to do it. So.
Okay. And then one of the things that I always find a bit interesting is obviously you're very heart on your sleeve and you open up about like your vulnerability and things like that. Like it's, I always see it as great for engagement and we know that. What pros and cons have you seen in terms of like the actual effect of business? Like, cause I know post a lot about your vulnerability. It's more of like a bounce back story, but then for people that are vulnerable in that very moment posting about it, surely I think if someone was saying I'm really vulnerable, I'm on the edge of a mental breakdown, I'd be like, do I want to go and give that person $5,000? Probably not. What are your thoughts?
I think it's very tricky. I think if I'm honest and look back, so for me, I've posted about it many times. The last year for me was very difficult. I walked through some things personally. I had some struggles with alcohol. Would say I was basically an addict. I was drinking a bottle of whiskey every single day, driving around in my camper van in the Scottish Highlands. You know, I was drunk on sales calls, man. I'm drunk on the feed, like everything. I was just out of it. Didn't care. Right? Now it worked for me, I think partially because I'm very good at sales. I go to the extreme where it's a character, right? I think we have to talk about social media at like some people become a character where they're almost really not even a person. And in a way, by that point, I'd spent 3 years on LinkedIn, hours and hours a day, man, like 6 to 8 hours a day for 3 years. Like people knew me, even if they didn't engage, like my face was everywhere. So by the time I got to this place where I started sharing, like, hey, I'm driving around in a camper van, you know, I'm drinking whiskey, I'm doing this stuff, like more than most people would, I had kind of this credibility on the platform. People knew me. Oh, that's just Luke. He's kind of a bit unhinged, a bit over the top, but he's a good dude. And I also drop in like, hey, I'm a writer. I'm a ghostwriter. And I think when you're a writer, there's lots of famous writers that are a bit off in the head, if we're honest, a bit fucked. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean you can't do your job. It's just, oh, like this guy's a little bit off, but look at his, for me, it's look at his engagement. Well, I get big engagement. Here's my case studies. Look at my clients. Like, you know, and I can prove that I'm good at the job. It's almost like, hey, we're working with a talented person. Do I want, you know, a lot of people are like, yeah, I don't want to work with you, right? I had a client message me like, hey, like your current state doesn't align with our values. Like we can't work together anymore. And I was like, yeah, I understand. And I gave them a refund and we were done, right? A couple of clients months later, it was like, hey man, like it was really like what you were doing this summer was really hard to watch. And you know, it's like, we stopped working with you because of that. I didn't know at the time, they just didn't renew, right? So it did cost me, even though like I gained a following and people enjoyed kind of like, wow, this is a bit of a disaster. Like where is this guy going? Now the storytelling element within that, hey, we love watching disasters as humans. We go to the movies, we watch these characters that fall apart, that struggle, and we watch them struggle, and we either want them to win or we can't stand them. Now, as a character on social media, that's great for me. Like I want people to feel something when they follow me. If they love me, if they hate me, if they're not sure what I'm going to do next, well, that's great for my reach, my impressions, my brand, short term. Now, long term, since then, I've kind of elevated out of that this year. I'm sharing less from that place. I've stopped drinking. I'm almost 7 months sober now, working on my life, working on like, hey, where is that line between I am an edgy character, like I do share more than the normal person should, but do I necessarily want to go back to what I was doing in 2020 and the way I was sharing? No, I don't. I'm like evolving as a person, right? And growing out of that. So I guess the answer for the average person is like, I would say, don't do what I did. Like, don't go that extreme. Like, don't share all your stuff on social. Unless you're willing to just embrace like, hey, you're a character. You're not human anymore. Because the kind of DMs I got was like that. It's like, people didn't really care about my struggle. They didn't know, like, yeah, this is actually real. Like everyone just thought like, oh, it's just Luke. He's strong. He's just kind of like, literally people just thought like, yeah, oh, it's just Luke. He'll be fine. But I was literally struggling with like life and death, man. It was a really tough year. And I didn't care if I woke up. That's why I was like, yeah, fuck it. I don't care. I'm going to drink and be drunk in all these calls and I don't care. I'm still going to convert. And I did, you know, and I guess that's the problem with being good at your job too. You can like get away with bad character traits and you're like, yeah, well, you know, I'll get away with it. I'm like good at this stuff, you know? So the average person shouldn't do it. And I just tell people like, learn from what you see on the feed. And if you do want to test personal stories, you got to feel it out for yourself and push the line and see like, oh, like that felt a little bit too far. Maybe I shouldn't have shared that openly. Let's just rein that back in for the next post. And just kind of test it out and see where you're at. But nowadays, like I don't do any of that. I've cleaned up what I do.
So it sounds like there was definitely a point where the real Luke Matthews and the Luke Matthews from LinkedIn merged, and there was this character, and you weren't really sure who you was, who he was. So like, break it down for me. So.
Sure.
We all wear masks for different points and different times. So who is Luke Matthews on LinkedIn? What is his values? What's his character? And who is the real Luke Matthews?
It's a good question. I don't think anyone's asked me in that way. I think looking back now, I use the 99 personalities thing, right? So I think the reason I use that as a ghostwriter, you have to tap into so many different like characters to really write well for your clients. I think there's a lot of ghostwriters that call themselves ghostwriters. They're more marketers. They're not really ghostwriters, right? They know how to market. They know how to write like one style of post. But to be a great ghostwriter, you actually, it's like acting. Like, you need to actually become the person you're writing for. Like, that's the best of the best. They do that. And the best of the best, we don't know them because they actually are ghosts. Like, everyone we know are marketers more than ghostwriters. That's another point. But so I think, like, when I say 99 personalities, I use that, you know, in a good way and in a bad way, where it's like that year, it was the complete unhinged personality that I have taken over. So yeah, just send it. I don't care. You know? So was it a mask? I think it was more allowing a certain personality trait to dominate, right? Where it's like, I need to use this to get through this year. I know it's going to convert for me. I know it's going to build my brand, but you know, it's not very balanced, right? It's not, I don't know. So to answer your question, who is the real Luke Matthews? I would say that's still the real me. You know, I was just going through a tough time and let one side dominate. Now I've got the personality. It's just more in the comments. Like, I share memes and funny things in the comments. I'll share the odd post that references that journey that I was on during that time of life and that kind of overcoming. You know, I stopped drinking. I lost 30 pounds. I had burnt my agency down to 3 clients. I'm back up to 10 now. You know, I got in shape, started working out. Like I said, I stopped drinking. So it's a weird transformation that I decided to do in front of the world instead of doing it behind the scenes. Like, I think a lot of people crash and burn and they do it in private. I was like, yeah, let's just do this in front of everybody. And so mine was just like, I posted about it and then posted about my recovery and like, everyone got to see it. And in a way it helped me, you know, I think that I'm weird and that I need a big challenge to kind of keep going in life. So for me, it was like, oh, I talked about this. I better actually like live up to it and do it. So who is the real Luke Matthews? I think what you see in the feed is me. You know, it's just selective. It's like, I don't share everything still like anybody. I think I'm more open than many, but you know, most of my real struggles, I don't put on the feed. You know, I won't say like, hey, today I woke up and I was super depressed and this person called me and this happened. Like, I don't do that stuff. You know, it's more of, hey, I'll share a story about how I overcame a dark time, you know, or I'll share like a current, like, bam, I'm picking a headline and putting like, I'm currently struggling with this, but yeah, I still pick and choose like anybody, you know? So didn't really answer your question. I guess I'm just thinking out loud.
It's good. It's good. This is what it should feel like, a therapy session, Luke.
It did.
So it's interesting, yeah. Because
it's a good question.
I feel like there are certain. I like what you've alluded to a lot here is you're a ghostwriter, which is what you are and what you do. One of the things I see a lot is like personal branders and people that take over people's LinkedIn profiles. I see a lot of it in the space, and I could, if it was a game and my life depended on it, I reckon I could do it. I reckon I could go, I reckon this person wrote those posts. It's the same format, the same kind of picture. And it's just like, give it a rest. You know, do you know what I mean? It gets to a point like, so, and I think a bit of a compliment for you is like, I wouldn't know what a Luke Matthews client looks like, which is a good thing. What?
I have friends. So, somebody. Sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
Well, I take that as a compliment. I actually have one of my good friends, Laura Costa, said the same thing. It's like, I have no idea who your clients would be, but I could pick out other people's clients. I know because they have patterns in the way that they write. And that's kind of what I'm referring to with ghostwriting versus marketing. There's some really amazing marketers that kind of call themselves ghostwriters because it's just a good keyword to get you clients, right? But they're more marketers. Like I actually feel like I'm a ghostwriter in that, like, I actually can write. Like, I wrote for a menopause warrior who did TEDx speeches and like events, and her whole thing was menopause, right? So I had to actually dive in and learn about menopause and try and become a 55-year-old woman to write about it. And I enjoyed it. Like, I gained so much empathy for like my mom and any woman going through menopause. It sounds horrible, man. But like, I actually had to like, okay, how do I possibly do this? And I did weird shit to try and like feel, you know, like empathize with it. And it's like, that's, I love that. I like that about actors too, where they'll like try and become their roles and it's really weird. And I think writing is similar. Like, if you're actually going to write the best, you have to do this. Now, that's how I approach ghostwriting until the last 6 months where I went, well, I also want to make money now. So maybe I shouldn't take like all these unique clients. Maybe I should focus on a couple things because it's a lot easier to replicate when you're building an agency, right? So now I'm mostly AI and high ticket sales coaches, and they're the easiest to deal with. And it's, but it's more like marketing. Is it true ghostwriting now? I would say now what I actually do is much more like LinkedIn marketing. I still write for them, but it's not the same, I guess, pure art that I feel like what I was doing before, where I was trying to become my clients. Now I'm like, I'm still obviously trying to do that because it's ghostwriting, but it's much more of a system and a business. Like, hey, we're just trying to get leads and results and business. Whereas I feel before it was much more of an art to me, where I was like, no, I'm trying to become like my client. And it was more just like, I worked with anybody. I just, to me, if they were interesting, I just wanted to work with them. Right.
Mm. My DMs are filled with weird and wonderful messages. I can only imagine that yours are fucking bizarre. And you get so many people. How do you work out who's time wasting and who's genuinely serious? And do you have anything anecdotal from your DMs?
It's a good question. So I used to try and keep up with them. I think until last year, I was like, every night I'm going to go to bed, there's no unread DMs. And now I just can't. I tapped out from it. Used to do the same with my comments, really, until the last couple months, where I like, I'm going to respond to every single comment. And I had thousands, you know, over 1,000 comments every post. So a bit obsessive that way. DMs, I kind of skim. So I can kind of tell who's a client based off their tagline and their profile picture. Sounds terrible, but it's just the truth. So I'll look and I'll go through like, oh, if there's an AI keyword in there or a high ticket coaching keyword, I'll answer that. And then if I recognize people from my comments, I answer them. Everyone else, to be honest, I ignore now. I just can't keep up, and I'm not smart enough to pay a VA to do my DMs for me. So I still do them all myself. So that's how I sort through it. And yeah, I get a weird mix, man. I've had like everything from the Nigerian prince thing to, you know, big brands want to work with me to chicks sending me nudes to weird memes to, you know, people like wanting therapy and telling me like bizarre things about their life to someone telling me their brother was held hostage and they needed money and they didn't look shady. I've had so many weird DMs because I tell weird stories, right? I think when you, and I was a mess. So I think when you're a mess on social, you kind of attract like messy people. So lately it's been more clean because I'm not really sharing my life as much. I'm more moving into educational content, just where I'm at personally, but it was pretty wild for a long time.
Okay. And then if we exclude the era where let's call it a rocky patch where you're sure. In the Highlands and things like that, is there anything pre that you look back at your, like, as you've grown as a writer and a marketeer, is there anything that you look back and you just regret and you think that was cheesy, that wasn't me, that wasn't authentic? Is there anything that you look back or like any telltale signs that anybody that's building a personal brand should be like, actually avoid that, that doesn't work or that doesn't help?
I don't think so. Like I look back, the only era, like I said, the rocky patch, I regret some things in there for sure. Before then, no, I think I enjoy the way I built. I didn't really copy anybody. So I grew slower than people I'm like friends with now or compare myself to. I started in 2020 early. So what, over 4 years now. And for me, it's slow compared to the people I'm chasing or competing with. The reason being, like, I didn't go, hey, I'm going to study Justin Welsh and post like him and get in his circles and get to the top. I went, nah, I just want to do what I want. And that when I came from Instagram, on Instagram, I was much more professional the whole time. I didn't share any personal opinions. It was just strictly photography, videography, professionally done. And then I would write articles for brands like Samsonite and Wrangler and things like that. So it was very by the book. When I came to LinkedIn, I didn't really need work. So I went, I just want to say what I want and tell stories. And so I actually kind of enjoy the whole journey I've been on because I didn't really need work. I just said what I wanted, did what I wanted, and I wouldn't take that back. You know, the only things that I regret were kind of during the rocky patch. Really, I probably overshared a bit and, you know, it wasn't perfect, but The only thing I would say avoid is like, don't do a free community. I did a free community on Discord for like a year and a half, and it took so much of my time, and I got zero ROI from it. I gave away pizza every single Monday, man. I'd host a meme contest called Meme Monday. It was a lot of fun, granted, but I gave away so much free pizza on LinkedIn, like those 2 years in Discord and on LinkedIn. It was wild.
But no return on investment.
I mean, I guess like if you're going to say over the long term, I do think people remember, like, you know, like when you give and you're just like, I would literally host GIF power rankings every Friday, where like we used to post GIF style posts on LinkedIn and they'd use a hashtag GIF power rankings. I would go through and I would find the top five people that posted using that hashtag. I'd make a carousel and then I'd go live on Friday and I'd rank their posts and rip them. And then I'd give the winner a pizza and bring them on a live. And I did that for like over a year. You can say like, I didn't really get clients from that directly. But I kind of like built a lot of connection with a lot of people and gained a reputation for, yeah, this guy just shows up and does what he wants. And I think that spilled into like, I'm somebody that I do sell through weird posts. Like I've done posts about bacon that have converted high ticket clients, same thing with pizza, wizards. Like I think I can talk about anything now and convert, partially because of maybe all that unscalable stuff that I did for so long. Maybe it put karma in the bank. Maybe people just remember me. I'm not too sure, but yeah, kind of an interesting side journey.
But that, from an outsider's point of view, that someone listening to this now will be, that doesn't make sense. So bacon and wizardry. So why are people giving you, I imagine you charge a lot of money to work with because you're very good at your field. So why would people give you a lot of money if it's like how does that work? Talk me through it.
So how it works, you're scrolling LinkedIn, you're scrolling a platform. And like you said, you can tell this ghostwriter wrote this if you really looked at it. So subconsciously people scroll, everything's the same. You know, you got the Twitter screenshot style, you got the nice carousel, everyone's fighting to be the best salesperson, the best ghostwriter, the best marketer. And then you stumble upon this person that wrote this really long, well-articulated post about how much he hates bacon. And it's written perfectly, like perfect formatting. Like you would think this post was about how to get leads through B2B marketing, but no, it's literally excessive detail on how much I hate bacon. And you're just like, what is this? What the fuck is this? And I do that repeatedly. And I did that repeatedly during those years. And I think what it is as a writer and a marketer, I can still show my class or how good I am in formatting, you know, in the engagement that I get, in the people I interact with about a bizarre topic. And it just stands out, you know, and that was the biggest thing. That's why I won on LinkedIn during those years. Like everyone was doing the same thing. And I just went out and I was hosting GIF power rankings, giving away pizza, dropping memes, hosting lives where I'd just rip everybody. I went 24 hours in a row live on LinkedIn. I think it's just, it was so different that it gets attention, and attention does sell. You just actually have to be good at your job as well. So it's like, if I get the attention and I talk to somebody, I'm also great at sales. So if I get you on a call, I'm going to close you. And I know that. So I don't really care how I get you on the call. If it takes a post about bacon or me ranting about wizards or me writing about AI in a really intelligent way, to me, it's all the same difference. As long as I can get you on a call, I think I can convert you. And so I think it's a combination of confidence and skills and then just being so different that it stands out, right? Even now, like if you scroll the feed, everyone does the same kind of stuff. They're trying to do cheat sheets, you know, in AI and stuff because they're shareable. They get you followers, or you're posting a carousel or you tell a story. Like your posts at least are different. And I would ask, like, do you book podcast guests through those weird posts? Do you get sales calls through those through those posts? I don't really know, but I do. So that's the thought process. Stand out, get attention, and then be great at sales.
I always think with personal branding, it's like a case of like, somebody might not need an agency or sales training or whatever now, but then if you constantly think about it, and then when it's like, I need a ghostwriter, we need someone to do this, bang, yeah, you're the first one that comes to mind. So it's just about, how do I make sure it's basic marketing 101.
It's living rent-free in people's heads, right? I think the real answer is most people are impatient. When I went, I'm just going to be around forever. And like you said, you're going to think of me. I think it can work in any industry. It's just most people are linear in the way they think. Like, I want to show up on LinkedIn and post for 2 months and start getting leads instead of, well, what if I showed up and I was a lawyer and I had a really unique angle and I did it for 3 years, then I'd have leads for 10. But no one thinks that way. We want to convert right away. So the only way to convert right away is to be like everybody else and just post sales content and boring industry content, because there's no vision. So
I agree. It's bullshit. And I like to, the thing is that, like, I don't use any other social media. Like LinkedIn, I'm on it. Yeah. You know how much I'm on it, probably as much as you. Like, I'm always there commenting. Yeah, I post every morning and post every day. Like we live on LinkedIn. It is like our office. I don't have that attachment to Instagram or Twitter because, and I'm sure they could, but they don't make me money. They don't get me in front of people. Like, I know that LinkedIn is a proven method that works. I want to, like, you said you hate bacon. I'm sure there are personal branders, marketeers that you hate. I'm not going to ask you to name any names, but what attributes of people, other ghostwriters, other people in your space, what are the things that they're doing that you think, fuck, that is so cringy, or that is so cheesy, or I would never do that? What are the things that people should avoid?
Okay, I'll tell you. And I can do names too, because I'm edgy. I don't care. So the first thing is, people build a following on a platform, so like LinkedIn. And in order to get that following, they need to post top of funnel content, right? Like, you don't grow followers on a LinkedIn or an Instagram or a YouTube unless a lot of people like the topic you're posting about. So, you know, AI, personal branding, recruiting, sales, whatever branch you want to pick, it needs to be something that a lot of people want to consume. And if you've grown a following to 50K, 70K, 100K, then you're good at what you do. You know what people want to read. And you're putting effort into that kind of viral content to build a following. A lot of people change when they get big from, hey, I'm caring about followers and likes and vanity metrics. And then all of a sudden they start writing posts like, no, I don't care anymore. It's just about being happy, or, you know, the amount of money I have doesn't matter. Your likes don't matter. Why? Because they're appealing to the small accounts that are discouraged when they look at big followers. And they know, like when I post, like, hey, no, you actually need to work harder. You're being fucking lazy. You need more followers. You need more social proof, because it's easier to sell. It's easier to win on LinkedIn if you have them. That's just facts. So sucks that you don't have them. You can still sell with 1,000 followers. It's a lot easier to sell with more followers and more likes. It's just human nature. People don't want to hear that. They want to hear like, oh, it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter how much you work. Just take it easy. It doesn't matter how many likes you have. Your vanity metrics don't matter. I think we can all scroll the feed and see the bigger influencers that do this, and they all do it, almost all of them. And I think it's BS. I think if you've built to that big of a following, you know what you're doing, you're good at the game, and then you're playing the game again. So, you know, the funny thing is, I think it's BS, but I also don't hate them for it, because it's just smart. You know, the average person is the idiot. That you're the one being tricked by these people. You should know better. And know and believe, like, hey, I actually do have to work hard. You know, what I have right now might not be enough, and actually look in the mirror and fix it and get better, because you can, because LinkedIn is awesome. There's so much reach that you can do that. People don't want that, though. They want the excuse. And so I actually don't get mad at the other influencers. I just go like, yeah, I see that they're doing, I see the game. But I don't blame you. It's more like, if someone complains to me, I tell them the truth. It's like, hey, no, it's your fault. Like, they're just doing like what you would probably do, what most people, what I should do. I'd make more money if I did it. I don't know. I just can't do it. So there's that. I have a big rivalry. I'll just say my buddy, Matt Barker, we raced to 100K and he kicked my ass. He beat me. It was devastating. I'm still bitter about it. So we started racing and we did it for about 7 months. And I got kicked off the platform for the seventh time. I've had 7 bans, which we don't have to get into. And the last one was like, hey, Luke, like, LinkedIn help was like, hey, Luke, if you get another warning, your account's done. Like, literally. And it was a human. It wasn't the automation. It was like, if you get warned again, you're not getting your account back. So I wasn't sure if I was going to come back to LinkedIn. I literally was off for 3 months. He caught up, and then I started posting in, and we had a really good battle, and he beat me to it. So congrats to my buddy Matt. Well done. But now he hates viral content. So all of his stuff is sales matters, likes don't matter, vanity decks don't matter. And I always tease him. It's like, hell, well, why couldn't you have done this before you beat me to 100K?
Yeah. Nice, man.
But he's awesome. Like, I just, like, I don't agree with his philosophy anymore. Like, we've totally gone, like, the separate ways. So we're still kind of battling in that we believe different things. But, yeah.
Mm. It sounded like when you were talking about the other people, the other influencers in this space, it sounded like there was a bit of, like, a bit of truth behind it. Who is the biggest culprit in this space?
Let's see. You're putting me on the spot. The biggest culprit. I think so. If you scroll the feed and you look at it, you'll see it. I probably shouldn't name names. I'll get myself in trouble. But if you scroll the feed, you'll see it. And yeah, I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to be smart for once in my life and not do
okay,
it.
Okay, where's that edgy Luke Matthews that we know and love? Okay, let's move on.
I know, that's the thing is I'm learning.
You're learning, good. Sales, you said earlier, if I get anyone on a call, I'm going to close them. Okay, you sound very confident with your sales ability. We are predominantly like... a bit of a sales podcast. A lot of people listen to us who work in sales and SDRs, AEs, sales directors, all of the fun stuff. Nice. What does sales mean to you? Like, why are you so confident when it comes to selling?
I'm confident because my funnel is long. It's all inbound. So I don't do any outbound, no cold calling, none of the good stuff that my man Ben, Mr. Dennehy does. I don't do any of that. It's all inbound. So by the time someone lands in my DMs, they typically have been following me for a long time, or they're really impressed by some amazing post that I did about AI lately or personal branding. So I know I'm way ahead because A, you've either followed me for a long time, you like what I do, or B, you're impressed by my engagement, the way that I write, whatever I'm doing. So I'm always on the offensive. I got a leg up. So it's not hard for me to take that to a call. And then when I'm on a call, I guess it's just swagger. Like when you're good at sales, you know, if I get you on a call, I think I can close you. Now, whether I do every one or not, I don't. I'm just good at it. So is there a philosophy to it, a method? Probably, but I've never taken any of those courses. I've never really worked on my sales game. I just find that if I get someone on a call that I want to close, I close them. And if I don't want to close them, then I just shut the call down. So, you know, I save myself a lot of time. I reject a lot of people. I probably reject like 80 to 90% of the inbound leads that request to work with me because I got a form and everything. So I guess I just really qualify. So by the time it's out of thousands and thousands of people that see my post, the ones that actually come into my DMs to get through, you know, my qualifications to actually hop on a call, it's like, it's so narrow. And I kind of know who that person is, the way they work, the way they function, that I just think I can convert them. You know, and whether that's like last summer where I was drunk on my calls or now where I'm more professional and I kind of do things the proper way. It's just having done it for long enough and knowing the person that's hopping on the call and what their pain point is that, and not really caring about the outcome, I guess. Maybe all your salespeople can relate with that. Like, I really don't give a fuck if I close anymore. I just show up and I'm just talking to somebody. So I don't try. I just expect it. And if it doesn't happen, I'm surprised.
Can I challenge you on something, Luke?
You can. I was waiting. It's been, what, an hour?
I'm very tame.
You're so polite. It's like,
is there an argument to be made that because of your brand and the fact that they've come in from inbound, they've already decided that they want to work with you and there is no selling actually involved?
Could be. I will say, though, it could be. But my kind of retort would be, I don't promise numbers. So I could convert 100% if I went, I can get you X amount of followers, X amount of leads in 3 months. I don't do any of that. So even if I have an easier sale, in social, it's really hard to sell packages when you don't say, I don't do analytics reports. I can't promise you followers. I can't promise you leads and still convert. Now you could say, well, that's just because your brand's so big. And yeah, maybe you're right. But we'll leave it at that.
Why should somebody work with you? If they're listening right now, why should they work with you?
They shouldn't. I'm too busy. I have a waiting list.
Okay. Good answer. That's what I like to hear. If you didn't have a... There we go. I'd give the same answer. If you didn't have a waiting list, I don't know how hypothetical we... But why would somebody want to work with you? Like, what am I going to get for my money?
Sure. So I would say you need to be in AI or high ticket coaching or sales. So for me, I kind of view it like I'm picking more than they're picking. Again, personal brand, I'm lucky to be in that position, but the offer needs to be right. So if your offer isn't right, you shouldn't really work with me. Cause I think if we're honest on LinkedIn, a certain kind of offer, certain kind of company, works better than others. A lot of people are just going to struggle to sell through inbound. And I know who that company is, who that person is by now. So most people listening shouldn't work with me because A, they either don't have the personal brand to sell the way that I know how to sell, or B, their offer isn't a good offer and I don't want to put the effort in to try and sell it. Or C, they're just not in the right space for inbound marketing and selling. So again, that's not really much of a pitch. It's just more of a reality. I think most offers and most companies are really difficult to sell through inbound. And we'd be better off doing, you know, paying for ads or doing another platform. And that's just from what I do. Like the methods that I know work for certain pitches, certain companies, certain founders, and they don't work for a lot of companies and a lot of founders.
What's next for Luke Matthews? Like 5, 10, 15, 20 years. In 20 years, am I going to see you screaming woo on my posts on LinkedIn? Or
you won't see me. No, my goal is to make enough money and get facial surgery, change my name, and no one will ever know where I am.
Why?
I only do social for money, really. So to me, I was in construction, so I loved working with my hands. Even last summer, like I bought the camper van and renovated it myself, and I really enjoy that kind of work. The problem is you're stuck to one location and you don't make a lot of money in construction. So I kind of shifted to, I wanted to be online. I wanted the freedom to work from anywhere, to get multiple passports and live in multiple places. So for me, that meant finding an online job, tried a bunch of things and found that I'm a good writer and good at marketing. But I wouldn't say like at the end of the day, I go, oh, I feel like I won today, or I feel like satisfied with what I do. I felt way more satisfied at the end of a day building a house than I do marketing. And that's just being honest. I think I'm better at marketing, which is great for me, makes more money. I do still enjoy it. Like I love trying to figure out how to sell for somebody, how to craft a post that actually works. Like I love all that, but like job satisfaction wise at the end of the day, I don't really feel like I'm making a difference or it's that important. It's just, you know, it is what it is. It makes money. I'm good at it. So I think for that reason, I wouldn't be sad to move on to something else. And then the whole idea of being known at scale, like I've never wanted to be like internet famous or an influencer in a small way, because it's obviously just LinkedIn. But I would never want to be Mr. Beast or any of these big people. And if I did, again, it would just be to exit. Like I would just want to make money, disappear, change my name and be done. And that's just me. Like I don't really enjoy the attention. I'm just good at it. And I find a way to make it work to make money. Right. So currently speaking, at least that's how I feel. Who knows if it'll be that way in a year or 2 years. Currently, that's kind of my plan. As far as 5 to 10 year plan, man, I'll be honest, until the last couple months, I barely knew where I was going to sleep like in a week. That whole year, 2022, like I slept in in the camper van, in warehouses, on a couch and luxury hotels, pop hotels. Like it was just a mix of everything. And I think now that I've moved to South America here and got set up, I feel good about being here. And I can't really think beyond just staying on the straight and narrow and building my agency and and trying not to drink and trying to be healthy. So like that's where I'm at right now. It's not the best
one day at a time,
but that's the real answer.
I find it so hard to believe, but you are coming across as transparent and honest. I find it so hard to believe that it's just for the money. Like there's not that the game that you're in, there's not a level of validation or acceptance that you feel and you kind of you thrive off. It is purely
You know what's beyond it? I will say so it is money, but I do think like I treated LinkedIn like a diary. Like no, you're not even supposed to do that. Like I would say now I don't like that I did that. But when I joined from Instagram, I didn't need the money. Instagram was going really well when I joined LinkedIn. And so it was like, you know, I just want to write like I would want to write. Like can I like what would that be like? Like, you know, and put it out in the world and see what happens. And so I think when it isn't about the money, I do really enjoy just writing about bacon and seeing what happens. Or trying to offend somebody and see like how they take it, like at its pure form. Like I do really enjoy the writing and just sharing from like a weird kind of raw place. So I think if we're going beyond money making and all that, I think I would miss that, but I'd probably shift it to like writing a book or doing something different. Cause I still would need to express, I think how I feel with the world, you know? And I think, as kind of a more introverted person growing up, like I wasn't very talkative. I wasn't actually that mouthy. I was pretty quiet, very confident, but quiet. And so I think writing's allowed me to like express feelings to people or learn and even learn how to communicate with the world and try and be normal in a sense, even though it's not normal the way that I write. So I think all of that kind of mixed in as well. Like I do enjoy it. It has helped me. It's helped me through. Like I said, last year was really tough and I think just writing helped me a lot. So that would be the deeper reason beyond just the money is just writing for the sake of writing. I also really enjoy.
It's a release. And this is, I used to be a songwriter and now I write in different forms and I don't write songs anymore, but it used to be that, oh, I've had a little breakup. I'm going to write a song about it. And it is that release. Yeah. I got one last quick fire question for you, Luke.
Sure.
And you don't have to answer it if you don't want.
Okay.
I'm going to take you to LinkedIn head office. There's a big red button. You can ban one person off LinkedIn. Who are you going to ban?
Wow. Can I think about it for a second? I get one and they're done. Like their business
and they're
is
done.
Done.
Their they're business finished. Is done. They're not coming back.
Wow. That's, let me think about it. Cause like, that's a nuanced answer. I think. How do you like, while I'm thinking, distract the audience? Cause I have to like, actually, it's a careful.
I'm gonna sing a song about Luke Matthews and who he's gonna ban from LinkedIn today.
Okay. So there is this person in my DMs. I'd have to find their name from, 2022, I did a post and they reported my account multiple times. They went back for like a year and it was someone that came over from Instagram because on Instagram I was doing sustainable fashion and it kind of touched into environmentalism stuff. So a lot of people come over from my Instagram days and they report my stuff now because I'm like the total opposite of that. I'm like red pill dude eating steak only and South America. Like everything I write, they hate. And so a lot of them will DM me and say, hey, I've reported your posts. Like, who are you? And so it was more common back then. And so this was a feminist chick and she reported all my stuff and got me banned for a couple of days. So I would go find her in my DMs and push the red button and take her out because that was kind of the first big ban for me that set off a series of now my account's like literally been flagged and I've been banned 7 times and that's changed the way that I can write, express on LinkedIn and really frustrated me overall with the platform so much so that I like said, quit it for 3 months. And so that first like girl that was a feminist that banned me that started it all, I would take her out for that. Cause it's caused me like some huge headaches on the platform.
Good. LinkedIn, if you're listening, find that woman and get rid. Typically at the end, we say like, if people want to work with you or find you, where we can find you. I'm sure that everyone listening to this podcast knows who you are, where you are. And if they don't, I'm sure they'll click on LinkedIn after this and they'll see your face popping up. But if that isn't the case and they want to find you, where can they find you? How can they work with you?
So LinkedIn, obviously, like you said, go on there, you'll find me. I'm also working on my YouTube next year. So I've hired an editor. My goal is to get to 15K subscribers by the end of the year. I'm at about 1K right now. So it'll be a lot of tutorials on how to use AI with content creation specifically. So kind of nerdier stuff. It's not really going to be entertaining. So if you're into trying to figure out how to actually use these tools, like I said, to actually make your whole process faster, that's kind of going to be the theme of the channel. So you can find me there. Like I said, I also launched a new community that in January I'll be talking more about. That again, that'll be on my LinkedIn and my YouTube. You can find it there.
Good stuff. Thank you for being so open and honest. I've enjoyed this conversation. Thank you, Luke.
Yeah, you too, Jack. Nice chatting with you finally.